This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And today, a conversation with 4th District Congressman Peter DeFazio joining us from up in the Springfield area. Congressman, thanks for being on today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, I know it's been a bit of a break. I use that term sort of in jest, but the August recess. But I know a lot is going on in Washington, D.C. But let's kind of take a step back and sort of give us an overview of the session that recently wrapped up.
Well, the biggest bill was the American Rescue Plan that we passed through the House and the Senate, signed by the president with no Republican support. And individuals throughout Oregon, my district, and else around the country each got individual checks. And then there is a child tax refund for people who have children in that bill. And, there's already some great statistics on how many kids that's lifting out of food insecurity and helping families, make ends meet. I mean, things still aren't back to normal, obviously, with COVID and the economy, and a lot of folks are still hurting. So that was the biggest thing. The Senate passed their version of my infrastructure bill. I have a lot of concerns with provisions in it. It's good funding. It'll provide a lot of jobs, but a particular number of areas. I had a lot more money in wastewater. I have a lot of towns in my district, and I was on a statewide call with mostly Republican county commissioners all around the state that need help with drinking water and wastewater needs. So I'm hoping to be able to increase that funding and other funds that will promote Buy in America, Buy America for buses that'll be purchased, electric buses and that. I don't want them made by the Chinese. I want them made by Americans here in the United States of America. So I had very strong provisions to prevent that. Senate bill, not so much. So I'm going to be working to make some changes.
And during the summer, as you talk about this infrastructure, how much is actually going on in terms of back and forth discussions?
Well, during the development of this so-called bipartisan bill, there was no discussion with the House. In fact, there was virtually no discussion with the committee chairs in the Senate. It was written by a rump group, self-appointed, we got a product that kind of reflects that. They don't know a whole heck of a lot about transportation, and they took care of themselves very nicely. They put money into their regions, their states, their pet programs. But the House and most members of the Senate were excluded from writing the bill. So we're going to do what we can to mitigate it in a process called reconciliation. And I'm involved in discussions with the White House and the Senate on how to move forward on that.
And, of course, as you probably heard, a lot of people have been concerned from varying points of political perspective that a lot of things in the infrastructure bill really don't seem to have a lot to do with infrastructure, at least in their opinion.
Well, there's two different bills. I mean, the infrastructure bill, which is my jurisdiction, is what people would call hard infrastructure. That's roads, bridges, highways, transit, wastewater, drinking water, pipelines, ports, rail, aviation. Those things were in the bill that came out of the Senate. The other bill that the president wants to bring forward would be a bill to help working families, extend tax cuts and assistance to working families, assistance for childcare. Childcare is unaffordable for most people, and there's a lot of single parents out there, or even couples, where both of them need to work, and the child care is out of reach unless you earn a bunch of money. So there are things in proposed in that bill that would be of tremendous assistance to middle class and working America, unlike the tax cut plan passed by the Republicans and so proudly signed by Trump, where 80% of the money went to people who earn over $400,000 a year. There's not too many of them around me in this part of the state. I didn't support that.
As you look at the legislation that's out there, both of these bills, what are the potential impacts on folks in the 4th Congressional District?
Well, last summer when I was down in Douglas County to look at the new bridge we're going to do to Oakland, where they had to restrict it to one lane, and we're going to do a bridge there. I got them some help with federal money. There are dozens of bridges in Douglas County that need a significant repair or replacement. In both the Senate bill and in my bill, there's a very robust new bridge repair or replacement program. In my bill, there was a special emphasis on rural areas, which didn't make it into the Senate bill, but I'm hoping to rectify that. In this new process, the so-called reconciliation, to put more emphasis on small cities and rural areas that often get left out in these big bills. So that's a work in progress, but it should be significant. I also want to help with transit for like Roseburg and other small cities in my district that want to provide at least some basic transit for seniors and others to get to medical care and those sorts of things. I had a whole new title in my bill to provide for that. Again, the Senate left it out, but I'm hoping to get it back.
As you look at the current situation in Afghanistan, obviously very fluid, what are your thoughts about what's going on?
My thoughts are it was inevitable. There was maybe a brief moment when we were first there after 9/11, the horrors of 9/11, and the world was united with us to go after al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and they were being harbored in Afghanistan, considered guests under their Sharia law, whatever it is, and they were untouchable. They wouldn't extradite them. So we went in to take them out. Now, in the process, I mean, the Taliban collapsed quite quickly. The problem was then before the job was done, Rumsfeld talked Bush into diverting all of our resources and attention to Saddam Hussein and Iraq, who didn't have weapons of mass destruction because he was such a threat. Unlike the al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, who had attacked us. In fact, he let Osama bin Laden get out of Tora Bora. We had him trapped, but he didn't send U.S. troops. He let the Afghan troops surround him, and Osama bin Laden bribed his way out. And that's what this whole thing is. It's like tribes, cultures, traditions, bribes. And after that, and after we made the worst foreign policy mistake in the history of the United States by invading Iraq, there was no chance that we were ever going to make major changes in Afghanistan, just like the Brits, the British Empire, just like the Soviets. It was inevitable that it would come to this. I mean, we spent billions training their army. Papers have just recently been uncovered. There's a book coming out that the generals just lied to us over years and under Bush, under Obama, and under Trump. Oh, things are going great. The Afghan army's great. As soon as the Taliban started advancing, they laid down their arms. Well, they gave them to the Taliban. The Taliban now has weapons they didn't have before. So it's a mess, but it was inevitable.
As you take a look at your recent legislative accomplishments, what ones do you sort of look at and particularly maybe want to note for folks?
Well, Douglas County doesn't have a lot of coast, but a lot of people go to the coast. I mean, you've got a small section of coast around Reedsport, Gardner. I finally unlocked the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. Taxes that have been paid into this fund for years were locked up in the Treasury. It took me 2 decades to get that done. So we're going to better dredge all the ports on the Oregon coast. I got money to rebuild the North Jetty at Coos Bay, which is going to make that harbor entrance safe for commercial, for recreational, and for bigger ships coming in and out. So that's, you know, that took a really, it takes a long time to get good stuff done in Washington. That was big. I also got something else I've been working on for two decades done last year, which is to take away antitrust immunity from the health insurance industry so they can no longer collude to drive up prices on your premiums. They can no longer collude to redline people or communities or divide up the market. You know, that was a very long time coming. I'm surprised I got it done. But that is going to have an impact on the price of health care in the future for all Oregonians, all Americans. You know, I'm very proud of that. The insurance industry doesn't lose many battles in D.C. We kind of snuck up on them and got it done. So, you know, I'm working on those things. The work we've been doing, you know, we're doing better now on fire than we did. You know, we've got the Forest Service after the disastrous, you know, fires down in, you know, down in Curry County a number of years ago. They've got a new attitude now to get on fires quick and hard and early. They've got more air resources. I spent a lot of time working on them getting more air resources. Not enough, given how big and how widespread these fires are, but we're in better shape. But now we got to get into these forests and thin them. And I've been advocating that ever since I supported the Healthy Forest Restoration Act. And we've got to get more funding to them. And this year, I think we are going to get a lot more funding to them to get in and thin these forests and reduce the danger of fire. So these are all things that have a major impact on our lives here in Southwest Oregon.
Good to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with Congressman Peter DeFazio. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. More ahead on Inside Douglas County, 1247, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1250. Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Tomorrow, we take a look at the current surge in COVID-19 cases in Douglas County and its impact on Mercy Medical Center. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Jason Gray will join us live from Mercy to talk about some of the changes they've had to make and how they're dealing with the current rapid increase in the number of folks hospitalized. That's on tomorrow's program. Congressman Peter DeFazio with us this afternoon. Looking ahead to the fall session of Congress, I'm curious, along with infrastructure, what are some of your current priorities, things you want to work on legislatively?
Well, I mean, we talked about the infrastructure bill before. That's big. I mean, we only do this once every 5 years. It's not done yet. You know, I intend to improve on what was in the Senate bill. Want to get more assistance to communities that have wastewater needs, drinking water needs. Want to get more money dedicated to rural areas, you know, to bridge replacement programs and that. So that, I mean, that is going to be a, you know, totally obsessive focus from now until it's done. It's supposed to be done by October 1st. Hopefully it'll get done on time. And then secondly, you know, be working with you know, the other Democrats, we're proposing this bill that will extend the child tax cuts, you know, provide assistance for child care. We're looking at mandating that the federal government negotiate lower prices for drugs, at least in Medicare. The president supports that. I support it for all drugs. We should. In fact, they're, you know, they're running ads against me now saying he's going to take away your drugs. No, what we're going to do is we're going to pay the same prices as people in other countries. Why do Canadians pay one third what we do for the same drugs, exactly the same drugs? Because their government negotiates lower prices for the people. So, I mean, it's time that this industry stopped price gouging. Yeah, they did some fabulous things developing the COVID vaccine. But you know, day in, day out, when they raise the price of generics, drugs that have been around for 30, 40 years, insulin, things like that, that's outrageous. And we need to get them under control and make this more affordable for people who have insurance, and it'll help lower your premiums, or for people who don't have insurance, because they get charged even more for the drugs than people who do.
How do you feel like the federal government's doing overall in addressing this ongoing COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, for the life of me, I don't know why the FDA hasn't given permanent approval to those vaccines. The FDA is a very cumbersome bureaucracy. If I was president, I'd be kicking them in the butt and saying, get that out there, because there's some people, not a lot, but another, say, 5%, which would be critical. If another 5% got vaccinated, it would really help stop the spread. We say, I won't do it until it's permanently approved. You know, that's an issue, but they're taking such a hands-off approach. You know, Trump administration, you know, kind of pushed the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control around. I think the Biden administration is overreacting, and, you know, in terms of that, and should be pushing them a little harder on those things. I was pleased to see yesterday that they're coming out with boosters. They're going to recommend boosters, even though the FDA hasn't recommended it for people who had Pfizer or Moderna. There's really good evidence coming out of other countries, Israel in particular, that a third dose really drives up your immune system, which will help stop breakthrough infections. But the key thing is, you know, there are breakthrough infections, but those aren't the people in the ICUs. They're not the people on ventilators. And in fact, most of them don't even end up going to the hospital unless they're old and frail. So people just need to get vaccinated and help stop this scourge. You know, I mean, the other way of doing it is you get sick and then you develop some immunity. But I think it'd be a lot more pleasant to get vaccinated.
Do you feel like the federal government has done an adequate job helping states provide for some of the things related to COVID-19 in terms of helping their communities around the nation?
Well, I just got the rules changed that through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is under my committee, to take away the requirement that Oregon match 25% of the funds that it spent during the COVID emergency. That's going to save the state, tens of hundreds of billions of dollars that they can apply to other things. So that was a good step. You know, the feds didn't have much to give initially. There wasn't any PPE, personal protective equipment, to hand out. There weren't any vaccines. Biden administration has encouraged, and I bought some masks. I wear a mask inside, and I certainly wear one on an airplane. I'm actually able to buy good masks now, KNI95s or even N95s that are made in the United States of America instead of China. So they've brought back, some critical manufacturing, which is filtering down to our citizens and to our healthcare workers. So, you know, they started from a bad place. I think they've done pretty well. But this stuff is smart. It's unpredictable. It keeps mutating. And with all these people out there unvaccinated, it's going to mutate in them. And who knows what the epsilon variety is going to be like. It could be even more deadly or more infectious.
Any idea where Oregon's congressional boundaries may end up in redistricting? And what about potential impacts to the area you serve?
No idea. The state got the statistics last week. The legislature is supposedly grinding away, looking at map alternatives at some point. I guess they'll make them public. I think they're going to maybe even hold some public hearings, which I think would be a good idea so people who are impacted can say something. But right now, it's a totally opaque process. I don't know any more than any other citizen who's not in the state legislature.
With summertime often being filled with in-person events, but then with this current surge of COVID things right now going on, are you doing any outdoor district activities, anything planned for the balance of this recess?
Well, doing a big teletown hall on Thursday at 3:00, and people will be getting notices about that, or they can contact my office. If they're on the do not call list, we don't leave them a message. and tell them about it. But if they want to get on the call, they can call my office. No, I'm going to be doing a coastal swing, but the events I'll be doing will be small groups and outside. I'm not going to do a big town hall meeting in this environment. It's not recommended.
All right, Congressman Peter DeFazio, a lot more to cover, and we'll do some more of that next time we talk. Congressman, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for the opportunity, Kyle. I'm really glad it's a cooler day for one.
1258 inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.